Welcoming into the studio, the citizen lobbyist who has been everywhere. But last night, of course, you were at a school board meeting, which attracted a lot of attention.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah, and I know it sounds like there were a lot of people there, and I'm suspecting there were a lot of people listening to our stream as well.
Yeah, that's more important than my D.C. trip, so let us start there.
Let's do it.
We should say that there was a full quorum. Not only was there a full quorum of school board members and staff, there was a full room of spectators and people from the public. In fact, it was standing room only there.
Wow.
A very respectful crowd, and they were all there basically about one issue that we'll get to here in a second. But let's just start by saying they did have their normal presentations. Mayor Cottle was there, as he always diligently is, to talk about his city and things are going on there. The fights are starting at Menard, hockey starting. He's very proud of a fat tire bike ride that they're going to have, the first ever one in the city. And most of those events have been taking place at this end. And so he's pretty excited about that. And he also announced something I've been sort of a part of as a disclaimer that I'm pretty proud of, too. And that's the Menard is now going to have a new senior walk time. Since free for all folks 50 and over. It starts February 1st, and it's free to walk on the Menard from 7:30 to 8:30, Monday through Friday.
Wow.
And that's a really good deal. I mean, normally it's not an expensive thing to do. It's about $2 a day to do it. But when you're a senior on a fixed income, that's kind of a big lift for some people. So it's gotten a lot of accolades, and kudos to Mayor Cottle. He got together people to sponsor it, the Solstice Family Care Center, Geneva Woods, Matsu Regional Hospital, and AARP Alaska is paying the tab for people to park, to walk in the morning indoors in a safe, warm environment. So good for them.
Yeah.
That was his little speech that started things off. They did have a little talk about where their talent and gifted program is. Nothing really new there that I learned, just kind of an update to the board. All these documents are online, and they did give a presentation, so if anybody's curious, they can go to the board documents and kind of get that. They did have, after that, the superintendent talked about the budget open houses that are coming up. He also did give some thanks to a new way of reaching to the public that AARP Alaska offered him. They had a teletown hall last Thursday, had about 200 people engaged in it, calling in, listening, and then about 1,100 more that visited the website and probably viewed the video. So afterwards, it was a really, it was an hour long. I stayed up late on the East Coast and listened to it. It was an interview by our state director, Ken Osterkamp, interviewing Gene Stone, superintendent, and it was, they took questions from people who either were sending questions on their computer or calling them in. So
Right. New
way of doing it. It's good that they're trying new technology and ways to meet the community. They didn't have a lot of time to really advertise it to people. So I think it maybe flew into the radar for people. It's and they will get a second chance to hear about the budget coming up in February, all those dates. I think they have three open houses, and these are actual open houses scheduled to go over the budget. But I'm glad to see them step out of their comfort zone and try a different way of doing it. And just a heads up, the borough will be doing the same type of a teletown hall the end of March.
Wow, great.
So we'll see if this technology helps people learn and interact with our government officials a little bit better. So then Gene Stone again went on to the budget, very big deal. It's the 2017-2018 budget. He had some nice preliminary budget handbooks there. Of course, they don't really have a budget until the school board votes on it and they sign, seal, and deliver it to the assembly in March. But the preliminary one gives you a pretty good idea where they are, where their deficits are, where their costs are, where their challenges are in the amount of about $9,000 or $10,000 that they're lacking in revenues this year to close that hole.
How much was that?
About $10 million.
$10 million. Okay, I thought I heard thousand.
Oh no! Oh, they wish. Yeah, okay. That could be a cake. That could be a cake sale. No, it's a big hole, and they're trying to figure out how they get out of it. And this is sort of based on a lot of assumptions. The school district is in the unenviable position of being the first to have to rectify their budget or solidify their budget, and the last to know what money they're going to get, not only from the borough, but the state. So they're working with a lot of unknowns. It does appear that they expect rather flat enrollment next year, maybe a few more kids, pretty flat. Teachers maybe adding 13 maybe for special education. They're unclear about that. But overall, even though they've opened 5 new schools, haven't added any positions to operation and maintenance. So he gave a pretty good background on that, and Mr. Phelps helped him on a few of that. So then they went on to public testimony, and I want to say there is a way to testify and not leave your home, and it was utilized last night, which really makes me happy. During persons to be heard, there was a testifier that called in, and she has been keeping an eye on the budget, and she wanted to point out that she said that the numbers don't add up. No matter what we do, we're going to be in a deficit. And she was also speaking sort of in advance of saying that she was not in support of putting out an RFP, a request for proposal, to outsource both the nutrition services and the custodials. She thought that all it does is turn work out to be high turnovers, which they should be costing in. She has no comfort level as a parent and as someone who is worked in the schools, that they really aren't addressing some of their other ways of wasteful spending. And, you know, basically she said what I think a lot of people were thinking in that room, that these custodians have been a part of the community and that she thought there should be more cuts to the administrative level. So they went on to start taking testimony at that point. I'd say they had maybe about 8 testifiers. Disclaimer, I testified as well. And they got a whole sort of an overview on why everybody was not in favor of this request for proposals. Mm-hmm. And just probably we should give some background. The reasoning of the district, the administration, is they have this big hole. And they surmise that they can save from about, I think it's $1.5 million up to over $4 million by outsourcing, letting private business basically do these two high-cost things for them, both the custodial services and nutrition services. And if you wind back the clock, Mike, I know you're well aware, they went to this rodeo before, so to speak, and right. They did outsource their custodial services for about 2 years, I think. Didn't seem to end well. There were a lot of complaints from teachers about the room's not being cleaned. There was a lot of internal conflicts. And at the end of the day, they determined they weren't saving enough money to continue the practice of outsourcing it, and they hired all the custodians back. So, you know, been there, done that. And people made a point of saying that, that they had already tried this, it had failed. It was a bad message to send to the community that we wanted to try something that just failed a few short years ago.
So just a question, since you were there, was there anything in the way of a presentation by the administration that explained why this is different or would detail what had been learned about doing it the last time?
Well, in all fairness to administration, they did give a presentation last meeting, not this one. They didn't really answer those questions other than the fact that, you know, I think that this is sort of bigger than the administration. The administration's been functioning with flat revenues for a really long time, and I think it's become a perfect storm. They have not been getting, and they have pointed this out in other, it's in this preliminary budget book, and I know I made note of it, that they are not receiving the local contribution as the other 5 big districts. We are now the second largest district in the state, mm-hmm. but the borough does not fund at a local level even as much as any of the big 5. We are not getting the local contribution that most communities give their schools. And that's due to the fact that the borough has not raised the mill rate since 2009. They've continued to cut things. They've cut licenses, you know, giving people a permanent license so people don't, they don't get that money from license renewal. They've cut airport taxes. They've cut business taxes. They've cut their own revenue sources, and they haven't added any new revenue sources. And the district is not in a position to add revenue sources. They are totally dependent on these other bodies, both the state, which they get 75% of their funding, and 25%, 24%, I think 1% is federal, from the borough. They are completely at the mercy of those two other bodies to fund them. And their funding is not keeping up with the cost of inflation. It's always been low. And they've never caught up to what they should be getting in local contribution and to make up for their increased costs. I think everybody could agree that most of their own costs have gone up in their own homes since 2009. And I think the appearance that people get is that I pay plenty of taxes. I already pay too many taxes. But in reality, we don't really pay a lot of taxes. We don't pay any state taxes at this point. And maybe your values have gone up, which makes your property tax go up because the mill rate is tied to your values have gone up. But that's your own savings, so to speak. Those are your that's what you benefit for when you go, come to sell your house. But meanwhile, roads have to be maintained. Emergency services have to be maintained. You know, and the borough is in a position of determining how to disperse the amount of property taxes they get to pay for all those services.
And we have also, as you were describing this, the potential in the near term, since we've seen some softening already in the Anchorage real estate market, of a softening of real estate, and which means basically that it's possible to see, as has happened in the past, the value of your home decline, which is a great thing from a tax standpoint because then you'll be paying less
taxes. If you're
not
selling your house, right?
Right. Unless you are counting on selling that house for some amount of money.
Right. And meanwhile, services march on.
Yes.
And so it is a big problem. And there were no solutions really offered so much from the audience last night, other than the fact that everybody needs to begin to talk to other people besides the school district about these shortages, like the borough, like their state legislature, about the funding. And I know I mentioned the cost of health care is the biggest driver of most of these costs. Then there has not really been any solutions on the table for that. I mean, there are some places to go, but the district is in an unattainable position. They cannot tax themselves. I mean, there are some school districts in the lower 48 that actually tax themselves. They go to the public and say, hey, we need this much more in property tax to operate. We can't do that in this state. Now, the legislature could change that. No, actually, they can't. It's a constitutional thing. They'd have to revisit the Constitution. But I mean, it's all changeable, but this is the framework that they're dealing with right now. And I know people have reached out to me and say, oh, you know, we have the highest cost of educating in the country. That's true. But we also have schools in Barrow and in places, far-flung places all over the state that aren't the same amount as they are in the core areas of other states. It's a really tough deal. It really is. The vote did come down last night. They had a lot of testimony. There was actually quite a lot of discussion on the board themselves. I think the most persuasive testimony from a board member came from Member Rutherford, who basically said, you know, we don't know how much this is going to bring us, but we do know it's not going to hold the, it's not going to fill the $9 million hole.
Right.
It's going to make, if it goes through and if we've identified all the costs, and I'm not sure we have identified what the cost of doing this is, it won't even come close to the $9 or $10 million that we're still needing for our deficit. So why are we doing that? Why are we disrupting our personnel? And we need a bigger solution than this. This is just, to me, not worth it. It's sort of disingenuous the way I feel about it. It's well and good to say, you know, we're going to put it out there and we don't have to take it. It's just a request for proposal. But I see what happens with these contracts, and it takes a lot of effort to launch them. And it's sort of a foregone conclusion, whether we want to admit it or not, if we put the contract out there, we're probably going to accept it. I know I made the point, and this worries me a little bit. There's really probably only one bidder they're going to get on a contract of this size, and it's the same one that did it last time. We are just limited by competition in this state. We're finding that in healthcare. We found that when we put our bus contracts out this year, one bidder. Anchorage got one bidder. We just don't have competition up here. And for all those people out there that say, let the market drive it, we don't have a market to drive. We just don't have enough people to make that work. And that is our problem. So I, even after Passionate Please, Member Welton, also Member Rutherford, I thought both spoke really well. And even some on the other side, Mr. Michelson had his reasons too in saying we have to try something. And he thought that was part of their fiduciary ability to do it, or necessity to do it. At the end of the time, it came out they are going to put the RFP out. Dissenting votes were Yvonne Ruth from the Big Lake area, Sarah Welton from Wasilla, and Debbie Rutherford from Palmer and Butte area. So we'll see how it goes. They'll get there, and hopefully even once they get the bids, there'll be some hard questions from the board about the cost of doing that, if they should
do it.
Do you
have a timeline of when this will be happening?
I think they're hoping to get them back before they have to finalize their budget and go to the borough. Mm-hmm. It could be implemented as soon as July. But I guess I want to say one more thing about this. So I was thinking about this on the way over, Mike. And, you know, they all, or several of them, admitted the fact they had not had any correspondence from anybody in support of doing this. Nobody in the audience spoke in support, no emails, and they had apparently gotten a lot of emails and even been stopped in the grocery store to be talked about this. Nobody supports putting this back out.
Wow.
And I think that matters, because I think that's our frustration now with our state legislators, that people want a solution. The polling says they don't mind paying an income tax. They don't mind paying more money. They're asking to be taxed. And yet lawmakers are acting like that doesn't matter what people think. And I think that's what was missing last night, is that I think about myself up there. And even though there's some rhyme or reason for getting information in front of you, it's almost like the elected people that put you up there to make the decision, who are now speaking, suddenly don't matter anymore. And if you're getting that many people and nothing in support of your own decision, you should be taking a pause, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's just a personal opinion.
So what, any other significant events then at that board meeting that seemed to have captured a lot of
the air? That was pretty much it. I mean, yeah. Once they had made that decision, the place pretty much cleared out. So they had a very short talk about scheduling of meetings, and ending comments were fairly brief. And then they had an executive session about, you know, they are in contract negotiations right now with all their unions. So I think they got a report from their HR department on how that was going. So,
okay. So the, just segueing, we have a few minutes left, certainly. And in the news is the upcoming vote on the nomination for Secretary of Education. And even more in the news, certainly here in Alaska, is the apparent decision by Senator Murkowski to not vote in support of that nomination. And as you were talking about people contacting the elected official, obviously, there's been reports that this is an unprecedented time with Senator Murkowski's office, whether it's Washington, D.C. or here in Alaska, receiving incredible numbers of voicemails, emails, people calling, and supporting a measured review of this candidate. And she has spoken a bit to it. So it seems that in some venues, some places, some ways, if you, if if there are a lot of people who raise a question about something, then it's taken into consideration.
Well, I would just say to that, that I don't think it's, we have two senators, and I don't think there's been any less calls to Senator Sullivan's office than there's been to Senator Murkowski's office. Some people may observe that one is listening and one is not.
Mm-hmm. Important too.
Yep. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I appreciate where Senator Murkowski is. She is the minority of her majority. That's pretty close. Senator Collins is the same way. Mm-hmm. And it's a very small club, getting smaller all the time. And you have to pick your battles. I know people were profoundly disappointed when she voted to pass Betsy DeVos out of committee. They thought it should have been stopped there. But I watched those committee hearings. They were painful to watch. But it was pretty clear to me that the chair was going to pass her out. And I think that's sort of reinforced by what you saw yesterday with the majority passing out people out of committee when there wasn't a quorum and sort of breaking their own rules. Yeah. So I don't think that that was going to help. It certainly would have been a bold choice on her part, but her reasoning, and not that it's actually been all the time that she thought that it deserved a floor vote. And I've had my own frustrations with legislation that haven't gotten to the floor, so I sort of understand that position. Mm-hmm. But we'll see what happens. I would encourage people who have been following it to continue to call Senator Murkowski. I know I called yesterday. I know people have said they've had some trouble getting through. I frankly have had no trouble getting through. And you don't have to try calling D.C. You can call I called and left a message in Wesley yesterday. So I think you can call. I called Senator Sullivan yesterday. I got right through. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to, and please don't, because they're getting thousands of phone calls. Just identify yourself. Give them your zip code. That's what they want to know. They want to know that you're a constituent that's mm-hmm. should have more weight. Give them a brief statement of whether you're pro or against it. Thank them for taking your call and hang up and move on. That's
so
really all it takes.
So someone else can do that.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think we're going to have a lot of that going on, I would seem.
And swing full circle back to the local area, it would seem, obviously, that there were a lot of interested people that arrived at that meeting last night. And as you pointed out, budget, there's been ways to provide information about the budget. But it's also maybe the situation where people are willing to contact your local person, whether it's on the city council or the school board, et cetera. That has happened occasionally. But I'm thinking that this may be a time when people are aroused to not just go to a meeting in that kind of, in my opinion, a kind of constrained environment. Mm-hmm. I can only do that, da, da, da. Mm-hmm. But also realize that all the local people, whether it's in Juneau or here, also have phone numbers and emails and offices very often, and they can be contacted.
Well, and you know, another thing I was thinking last night, which makes me think I've been doing this business too long, but you know, we have legislators and we have influencers of legislators. And one of the joys of living in a small community is we kind of know everybody. We know whose friends are whose friends and who our friends listen to. And, you know, it's just like when you're trying to get a friend to change their mind about something, whether it's a relationship or what their kid's doing. Sometimes it doesn't come from you very well, but it will come in a different way from somebody they might listen to. So don't just limit yourself to talking to somebody and you're feeling frustrated because they aren't listening. Talk to their influencers and ask that they make a call. And sometimes I find that they don't even know what's going on. They agree with you and they think that person should be called, but they just not in their world. So I think this is the time that we have to communicate and the time that we have to use all the tools in the toolbox. And I think you better get used to it because I think we're going to be in that position for a while.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you, Citizen Lobbyists, for taking the time to come in this morning. Welcome back. And of course, Valley Edition will be taking on the task of some further discussion tomorrow.